From the Center for the Study and Teaching of Writing, this is Writer's Talk. I'm Doug Dangler. After a 1993 attempt on Pakistan's K2, Greg Mortensen arrived at a remote mountain village needing help. What he found inspired him to co-found the nonprofit Central Asia Institute, and he has dedicated his life to promoting community-based education and literacy programs, especially for girls, in remote mountain regions of Pakistan and Afghanistan. Mortensen is also founder of Pennies for Peace and co-author of the number one New York Times bestseller, Three Cups of Tea, one man's mission to promote peace one school at a time. Welcome, Mr. Mortensen, to Writer's Talk.
Hi, Doug. Thanks for having me.
Great. I'm happy that you're here. I should be calling you, though, Dr. Greg, as the people often refer to you in the book because of your background in medical training.
So. Well, I'm just Greg. My wife's got the PhD, so we'll call her doctor.
All right. Well, tell me about co-authoring this book with David Oliver Rellin. What got you started on it?
Well, I've been working in Pakistan, Afghanistan for over a decade, setting up schools, mostly for girls in rural areas. Mm-hmm. And more people were asking to know more about the process. Also, after 9/11, there was quite a bit of keen interest in the area about how the lack of education or illiteracy was part of the component of what led up to 9/11. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really a writer, I guess. I take a lot of notes, but they're mostly financial records. Mm-hmm. And I drafted an original manuscript, 5 chapters long, submitted them to several publishers, and they said, the story's great, but the writing is horrific. So the publishers found a writer to help me out. I pretty much dictated everything on a tape, and then he helped write the book. It was a long process. It took over almost 3 years. The co-author came to Pakistan 3 times, and the most difficult part was putting a timeline together. So I actually finally put together all of my financial records, which I have quite accurate records on, and we developed the draft and timeline from our financial records.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, because when you're writing a piece like this that's going back a number of years, it's difficult to remember. And one of the questions that I'm always curious about for authors is, how do you remember all that stuff? How do you go back in a memoir? So it's mostly off the financial records then.
Once you start recalling incidents, you start remembering a lot more things. And then we interviewed hundreds of people that were there during specific events in the book. And what was interesting sometimes is you interview 3 or 4 people and we all had different recollections. Mm-hmm. So in that case, I left it up to the author to kind of siphon out or decide what he perceived had happened, because it's interesting how your recollections vary quite a bit sometimes mm-hmm. with specific events.
Mm-hmm. Were there times you were surprised by what he came up with when he put all of those reconstructions together in the book?
Well, most of it worked out pretty well. There were some events where I also encouraged people where we had made mistakes or failed, or people have been very critical of our work. I tried to get their voice out as much as possible mm-hmm. to get people who disagreed with us, and I think it came out really well. We also had to be a little sensitive in the, with some of the names and locations, because our schools are under duress or being targeted by the Taliban. So we had to use a little bit of sensitivity. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we got quite a bit of comments on, or even criticism, is that there wasn't mentioned enough about my own personal life with my wife and our relationship. But my wife deliberately asked me not to divulge and share too much of that. And mm-hmm. we don't have any scandals or anything. We just pretty much have a marriage that, we have problems. We also were very devoted and dedicated to each other. And so my wife preferred that I don't talk about that too much in the book.
Right. Well, one of the things I noticed is that, as you said, there were times when things didn't go as you might have liked. And it strikes me that that's one of the reasons why this book has probably been chosen by a lot of universities as a first-year book, because you're talking pretty plainly about areas that didn't go well. I mean, the book starts in the first couple chapters with the descent off of K2 And I think the ascent on K2 probably had, it didn't really go as you had planned. There were problems, there was an injury, and then you came down off of K2 without reaching the summit. And I'm really, not surprised, but I think it's a really great theme to talk about. You know, there are failures, but there's also, you know, ultimately it led you to a very different goal because you had started out as a mountaineer and ended up as a person working to create these opportunities for other people in schools. And,
well, the irony, Doug, was that the first chapter in Three Cups of Tea is the word failure. And when I submitted the original manuscript to New York to Viking Penguin, the publisher, they told me, they said, Greg, in the U.S. you never start a book with the word failure. But I insisted on that because we all make mistakes and we all fail. And in order to succeed, I think we do have to fail sometimes. And in my case, specifically, it really was a failure that led to our success. Mm-hmm. And the other little bit of contention I had with the publisher was that they wanted the subtitle to be One Man's Mission to Fight Terrorism One School at a Time. And so finally, I want it to be One Man's Mission to Promote Peace One School at a Time. So I went to New York when the book first came, before it was published, and I tried to eloquently state my case. When I got done, they said, Greg, you know, in the U.S., only 1 out of 8 nonfiction books makes a profit, and 2/3 of all bestsellers are pre-chosen by the publisher. So we'd like to promote your book, but you need to be fighting terrorism so we can pitch the media. And although I'm a military veteran, I was opposed to that because I wanted it to be about promoting peace. And mm-hmm. so finally, I made a deal with them. I said, if the hardcover doesn't do too well, I want the paperback subtitle changed. So the hardcover came out in 2006. For a year, it didn't do very well, and they changed then the subtitle to One Man's Mission to Promote Peace One School at a Time in March 2007. And now it's been a New York Times bestseller for 138 weeks in a row. It's not just a subtitle, but I really think that there's a yearning in public about peace. And my perception is that fighting terrorism is based in fear, but promoting peace is based in hope. And the real enemy we all face is ignorance. It's ignorance that breeds hatred.
Mm-hmm. And you've got a really interesting quote in here that you talk about, if you educate a male, you educate an individual. If you educate a female, you educate a community. And I thought that was a really interesting way to approach doing the schools, because educating the women keeps them in the community, and they don't leave in the same way that a lot of the men do after they've been educated. And that's also, though, I think led to some of the difficulties you've had with people being opposed to the schools, because there are, you know, you are educating females, even though it's a very secular curriculum. So I thought that was a really interesting theme. Your book is written in third person, and that also struck me as sort of surprising. Most memoirs are written in first person and tell the, you know, the uplifting or more recently the depressing story of one person's life. Tell me about writing it in third person. What I take it that was because you were telling the story to another person, and that's how David Oliver Rellin decided to write it.
My wife says if I write a book, it'll be a pamphlet. And actually, there was considerable pressure from both the publisher, my wife, and others to write in first person. But I'm actually a fairly reserved person. And so David was quite adamant also about writing it in third person. So for me, it was, I agreed that it'd be in third person. I have written another book that I just got done with. It will be out in December, called Stones into Schools, and I did that book now is in first person. It's quite a, I had to really push myself sometimes you know, one thing that good writers have, many of them have, is a pretty healthy ego. And, you know, with all sincerity, my wife says I pretty much don't have an ego, so it was a little bit hard for me to push myself to write in first person. And I also think that having done some writing now, that the very best writers, I look at it as the book as a clear piece of glass. And if a writer really gets caught up in himself or herself, the glass gets kind of opaque or cloudy. You know, they want to stunt you or impress you with their verbiage or their vocabulary. Mm-hmm. But I think a really good writer, it's not what words are there, but it's letting the reader see right through that pane of glass and look at the story on the other side. And I really enjoyed being able to write in a very personal style, where I feel that it doesn't matter the words I use, but it's really just letting the reader kind of immerse himself directly in the story without, you know, clouding it with some very impressive verbiage or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you've also got a young adult version of Three Cups of Tea, and then you have a children's book for it. Tell me about how you repurposed from the larger book into those other two, and sort of what led into that. I can guess the obvious reason is, you know, making the story more widely accessible to people that maybe don't have the capacity to sit down and read a long textbook. But are there other things that you were hoping to get from those books?
Well, I did the young readers and the children's book. It started in 2007. I was at a fourth grade class in East Houston, a quite impoverished area, and there were kids reading the adult book. And I called my wife Tara, and she said, "You're going to have to write a book for young readers and children." So that's what I did. But I have at home, I have a pile of about 2,000 letters and emails with criticisms and complaints and praises and suggestions for Three Cups of Tea. So I actually went through them very carefully. I also talked to dozens of teachers. I talked to many students, women's book clubs, and other groups. So in the Young Readers book, we have a timeline, a glossary, who's who, more charts, more diagrams, more maps, more photos, and also 20 pages by my daughter, Mira. This was in response to many of the comments I'd received from Three Cups of Tea, the adult book. And then we did a children's picture book. The other reason is I for many years, visit about 150 to 200 schools a year in the U.S., from kindergarten through the Air Force Academy. And today I was at Linden School here in Columbus. Incredible time. And I really think that it's important that we impress upon our children and kids that about making a difference and community service and service learning. So I wanted some way to bring that message to the kids. So that's why those two books are there.
Okay. Well, that's really a great idea. Did you read other memoirs before you started writing yours, or how did that work for you?
Yeah, I read several books. I'm actually fairly prolific. I read about two or three books a week. I pretty much skim through books. So I'm not, my wife, she looks at every word and she knows every detail. I pretty much skim books, and I also have this odd habit of, I usually read the end first, the epilogue or the last chapter, and then I kind of figure out if I want to read the whole book.
So you figure out what Rosebud is first, and then you watch the
right
movie. Okay, good.
And I also, when I was quite young, I grew up in East Africa. I read, you know, as I was even 8, 9, 10 years old, but I read some autobiographies, and my dad encouraged me to read. One is called Reverence for Life by Dr. Albert Schweitzer, who was a doctor in Congo. Right. About respecting all human beings and all living things. I also read a book when I was about 12 called Territorial Imperative, which had a big influence on me, but it talks about how territorial humans are maybe worse than animals. And I always appreciate now that my parents encouraged me to read a lot, and it's had a big influence on my life, reading books.
Okay. What was your, when you say it had a big influence on them, I'm curious how conscious you are of those influences. Did you think, you know, this is going to be sort of the kind of way that Schweitzer wrote his book, or the Territorial Imperative, or the name of the book that I may have just gotten wrong there? Did you have a conscious sense of that as you were writing it, or relating the stories in particular ways to David Oliver Rowland?
I didn't really have any goal or narrative in mind. Mm-hmm. And I also, the book I just got done called Stones into Schools, I very deliberately set up a narrative and arc and all those things I learned from Three Cups of Tea. What I did want to do is do quite a bit of what I call storytelling. And the reason for that is the oral tradition is very rich in many indigenous or third world societies like in Asia and Africa, South America. And one thing that I've learned going around to schools in the U.S. is that the oral tradition is fairly eradicated in our society. And I ask students in every school I go to, how many of you have spent a lot of time talking to your grandparents or elders about the Depression or World War II or Vietnam or the Civil Rights Movement? And in the U.S., generally, it's about 10%. In Columbus here, it's 15%, but a little bit. And at the Buckeyes, OSU yesterday was 15%. But that same question, when asked in Afghanistan or Pakistan or Africa, 90 or 100% of the kids put their hand up, and I think that's a great tragedy. And we've lost that oral tradition where we can learn about our folklore, our culture, our heritage, and history. And so I try to use the book as not only an autobiography or talk about what we're doing, but also as a kind of oral narrative storytelling.
Okay. Well, let's take a moment and actually go to the book. And I think you've got a passage here that you were hoping to read. And do you have your glasses?
Oh, it's okay.
Okay.
And this is from Three Cups of Tea, and it's page 257. The scene is, I was in Pakistan 3 months before and after 9/11. This is on September 14th. After 9/11, I decided to stay over there against the advice of many people, but I had a lot of work to get done. So 3 days after 9/11, on the 14th, we inaugurated a girls' school, a little hamlet called Quardu, which is in northern Pakistan. It was quite tense at the time. There was thousands of people who had come to this little girls' school to hear what myself, what the imam would say. And the imam, he's the spiritual leader, his name is Syed Abbas Rizvi. He got up and gave a very eloquent speech on that day, September 14th. So this is just some excerpts from his speech that day. "It is by the fate of Allah that has brought us together here in this hour," Syed Abbas said. The stage he stood on, invisible with a crush of bodies, made him seem to float above the crowd in his black cloak and turban. "Today is a day that your children will remember forever and tell your children and your grandchildren. Today, from the darkness of illiteracy, the light of education shines bright. We share this day with the sorrow as people weep and suffer in America," he said, pushing his thick glasses firmly into place. "As we inaugurate this school, those who have committed this evil act against the innocent, the women and the children," meaning in New York and the U.S. and Washington, D.C. and Pennsylvania, "to create thousands of widows and orphans, they do not do this in the name of Islam. By the grace of Allah the Almighty, may justice be served upon them. For this tragedy, I humbly ask you," meaning me, "for forgiveness. All of you, my brethren, protect and embrace these American brothers in our midst. Let no harm come to them. Share all you have to make their mission successful." Syed Abbas paused, considering what to say next, and somehow even the youngest children among the hundreds of people packed into this courtyard were absolutely silent. "I request America to look into our hearts," Syed Abbas continued, his voice straining with emotion, "and see that the great majority of us are not terrorists, but good and simple people. Our land is stricken with poverty because we are without education. But today, another candle of knowledge has been lit. In the name of Allah, may it light our way out of the darkness that we find ourselves in." And then I go on that there was an incredible speech. So mm-hmm. This was right after 9/11.
Yeah, well, that's a great passage. Thank you. And that's again in Three Cups of Tea from Greg Mortensen. I keep putting a G in your name for some strange reason. And David Oliver Rellin. Tell me, now that you've written a couple different things, you've written some memoir, you've written for a memoir for young adults and some children, is there a genre that you haven't yet written that you'd like to try now that you've done some of this? Is there a science fiction story in the future or something like that that you've got up your sleeve?
Well, as my wife says, I'm a little bit of a boring person. I just read nonfiction and I write nonfiction and I don't watch film or movies at all. Mm-hmm. But I really find it fascinating. And most of the books I read are actually historical books. But I also love to, especially with my kids, We write stories together. I've had my kids since they were about 6 or 7. They do small books, and we create. They love to write short story poetry, and so I guess my genre is that I'm really hoping that my children will use writing more as a way to express themselves.
Okay.
And we also have, with some of the profits of this book, I've created a scholarship or a contest, basically, in Pakistan. 5 different categories, like short story, fiction, nonfiction, poetry, and it's for all 5 provinces, and we have kids from all over the country submit these stories, and these are from very poor, impoverished villages for a contest, and in the winter they get about 10, 20, like maybe $200, $300, which is a significant amount of money. So we're trying to encourage kids to write more, and I really am hoping what that comes out of that is that the kids themselves in our schools and beyond will start sharing their thoughts and their hopes and aspirations and their life, you know, in prose. And that's what makes me really excited.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Well, I want to thank you very much, Greg Mortensen, for being here today and talking to us about 3 Cups of Tea. And you've also got the Pennies for Peace Toolkit, which I think is available on 3cupsoftea.org.
It's online and also hard copy.
Okay. And 3 Cups of Tea, you've got a benefit for the children of Afghanistan and Pakistan. We'll do a picture of this. And it's a song.
It's a song. It's my daughter Amira, who's now 13, and it was her first, she recorded that in Nashville, and she's an aspiring singer, so she sings a song, 3 Cups
of Tea. At 13, she's an aspiring singer.
Singing.
That's excellent.
I'll stick to writing.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Doctor.